This is an RNIB Connect radio podcast.
Now that the fields of Worthy Farm in Pilton, Somerset are being returned to the home of Sir Michael Evis's cows, following on from the 200,000 or so festival goers who camped out on the fields for Glastonbury 2024, you might be wondering how accessible the Glastonbury experience might be for someone who is blind or partially sighted. Well, I am delighted to say that joining me now here on RNIB Connect Radio is Zoe Partington, visually impaired contemporary artist who was there at Glastonbury 2024, not only enjoying the experience of the art, music and general vibe of the festival, but also was involved in organising a team of visual guides too. Hello Zoe, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, and hopefully you've had a bit of time to recover from Glastonbury 2024 now.
Yes, no, great, thank you, and it's lovely to chat to you, Toby.
So, Zoe, was 2024 your first time attending Glastonbury? And how was the access this year for blind and partially sighted people? And why did you sort of, I suppose, get involved in organising this team of visual guides?
Yes, I mean, this was the first time I've ever been to Glastonbury. And quite a few months ago, I saw a request that went out to find out if sighted guides as volunteers or visual guides would be available for the festival. And I contacted Claire Elsom at the festival to say, yep, I was around, I maybe could offer other advice. And I did know some people that might be able to support this. She got back to me and said, oh, wow, that's amazing. They have so much to do on the access side. Would I be able to help her get the volunteers to come and help with the visual guiding and the audio describing? And could I sort of help put that team together and then be there to help it while the festival was on?
Yeah, for me, as somebody who's registered blind, I would be quite apprehensive of going to Glastonbury, not only on my own, but with friends as well. But that just might be me, because I think I would be quite worried about the size of the place and all the people. I know there is an accessible campsite, but Zoe, what else was on offer this year for blind and partially sighted people?
I think what we try to, I mean, there is an accessible campsite, and actually it is absolutely brilliant. You know, it really is good, because I think, I mean, one of the things, and you're probably aware of this, Toby, is lots of people that are blind or partially blind also have other impairments. So sometimes it might be that they need to store medication, you know, in fridges on that area, or have accessible showers. So there's other things, and there's space actually. It's not quite as busy as some of the other parts of the festival. And camping, if people haven't been, it is very, very packed, the camping areas. Slightly easier for families, a bit more space. So I think it's understanding all of that. But what we were able to offer, and a lot of that was about people signing up to the access team to say that they were visually impaired. So if those people signed up, they received an email to say that the team was there, we were available, you know, to come and meet us on the first day that people arrived. So if that was the Thursday, to come and meet us at 10 o'clock and then 4 p.m. later on in the day. But actually, Toby, we were there all the time. We had somebody on that desk available just in case someone popped round. But also we had, you know, they gave us T-shirts, which not necessarily blind people would see, that said visual guide on it, and sort of, you know, ways of flagging it up across the site. What happened was other people saw it and then said, oh, I know somebody that might be really interested in that. Or they asked about how a blind person may come to, you know, they would, now they knew about it, they'd be coming to other years if they can get tickets. So I think it was about raising the awareness, being available, and enabling people to start having that conversation, an expectation that they can go to an event like this.
And of course, Glastonbury is all about the music and everything else, but there is also a great wealth of art and performances that is available over the festival weekend. Was there much in the way of audio description and the ability for people to explore some of the works of art through touch if they wanted to do so?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, there's masses of art there. You know, there's workshops which range from yoga workshops to, you know, metalsmithing. But also there's a place called Carhenge, which has loads and loads of incredibly and quite large scale as well. You know, 2, 3, 4 metres high sculptures of cars, of horses, all out of parts of recycled bits of cars and paraphernalia, aeroplanes, and they're massive pieces. So Anne Hornsby was there, so that was fantastic. So Anne did some descriptions for some people that wanted to know more about that. And we also had Jonathan Nash there, and I know that I think Birmingham Ballet were there, so he was prepared to be able to do some descriptions of the costumes and some of the dance. So it was really about making sure that we were where a blind person might want to find out about something or have audio description, we could provide that. And obviously, it was all done, it was a very sort of quick process, but I think that's part of the festival. Things happen, people find things out, or they suddenly arrive and know about stuff. I think longer term, because this was the very first year it's been done, it's trying to find out, which bits are static and always there that maybe we could pre-order describe and have, QR codes or information available so people can be more independent if they want to. Or just having, I mean, it's like everything, isn't it? I think even in the museums and galleries, sometimes it's really lovely to have a real person there so you can ask questions about the things that you're trying to access. So I think we was it's a real balance of trying to, provide a range of things and do it in a way that's manageable because, as you say, it's a huge site, it's very complex, and there are so many events and opportunities on that you have to sort of pick what's possible for you.
As an artist yourself, Zoe, were there any artworks or performances that stood out for you?
I absolutely loved the car henge and the metal sculptures because obviously I've spent all that time at the Henry Moore Research Fellowship looking at how blind or partially sighted people can access sculpture and the sort of tactile things that are available. But also, I saw Paloma Faith. She was absolutely amazing. I absolutely love her. I've never seen her live. And she was just brilliant, really breathtaking. And I think, I was lucky because I was able to go on the viewing platform, which is, in a way, it's set up for a lot of people that may need space away from the crowd or a bit more accessible for their scooter or their wheelchair or they've got mobility impairment. So you can sit down and bring a chair. But I think also for me, as somebody that's visually impaired, and I've also got a chronic condition, there was toilets available nearby as well. So it sort of makes it all so much easier. And it meant that I could enjoy the show and just absolutely rock to Paloma Faith, really, Toby.
And how about getting back to your tent at the end of the night or in the early hours of the morning, Zoe?
That we did have, I think that's why it was really good, not just to have audio describers, but to have sighted visual guides available, because it can be incredibly busy when the performances finish and it can be very disorientating. So I think that familiarity of the guides being with you, taking you back. Sometimes we could use access routes that other people couldn't necessarily use, but even those were busy, with performers and all the people that were with them, supporting them, or security things going on. So I think it was really important for people to know that there are people available if you don't want to try those routes on your own. It laid out, I mean, I think, the more times you go and the more you get used to the layout, you'd have an idea, but they're quite, it's in the middle of a field. So it's sort of, they're rocky, stony roads, incredibly dusty. So, I mean, I wouldn't be using my cane there because I'd be worried that it could get broken or not used. Some people were. A lot of people did come with a PA, but I think the offer that we provided was that sometimes your PA might be exhausted or not really wanting to watch that band. So we could offer, a PA that could help doing that. So I think that was incredibly useful. And getting back to the tent, I was so happy to have a guide on my PA with me to get back to the tent because I think I would struggle to get there, Toby.
And now that there is a team of visual guides in place at Glastonbury and going on your experiences this year, would you recommend and say that Glastonbury is an accessible festival for blind and partially sighted people?
Yes, I'd say it was, Toby, but I think it's knowing that the access team is there and knowing that this offer is there. It's not perfect, and I don't think any festival of that scale, can be perfect. Maybe over the next 10 years it would change. Things like I have had a blind person look at the app, test the technology, see whether that worked for them. And that, they've given a bit of feedback, but they said it was really good. They did enjoy using it and it worked for them. And that's where I think feedback's great. The team really welcome feedback. And I think each year they take the feedback, they act on it, and they try and build on that. And again, not guaranteeing perfection, Toby, but I think the culture there is one of embracing diversity really across the board. So a lot of the volunteers and some of the staff that are there, you know, they're visually impaired or they're disabled people in, you know, they might have a mobility impairment, they might be a wheelchair user. So they're, you know, disabled people are visible and present. And I think you notice that as a disabled person. So that was fantastic.
Oh, that's really good to hear. And when next year's tickets go on sale and people have managed to purchase their tickets, how do they find out about access at Glastonbury and also the team of visual guides?
One of the best things to do is to email, and it's accessibility@glastonburyfestivals.co.uk. So I think if you send an email to them, you can start to discuss with them and map out what you need and start to work out, you know, what is going to work or what facilitation you might require. That would be a fantastic place to start. And I think it's also knowing that if you're with family or other people, they can also have an access pass, you know, onto the viewing platform. So you have a companion pass, which is really helpful, really useful.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed, Zoe, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me about your experiences of Glastonbury 2024 as both a fan and also being involved in providing that team of visual guides.
That's no problem, Toby. And it was, you know, it's a pleasure to be here and to share those opportunities with everybody. And also for me, you know, it took my fear away. I don't think I would have booked up without knowing that this is all available.